This episode of The Grape Nation is brought to you by Washington Wine. With over 1,000 wineries and 70 grape varieties, Washington State is home to wine the world is talking about. Learn more at washingtonwine.org. Welcome to The Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. Our guests are Eric, Benny Bloom, and Ryan Zoidis. We'll talk to Benny and Ryan about wine, music, and more. We'll taste a ferment from Dirty and Rowdy and a bunch of other stuff the guys brought in for our weekly wine sip. I'm Sam Ben Ruby. Stay with us for The Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. Ryan Zoidis and Benny Bloom travel the world blowing some of the hottest riffs with legendary funk band Lettuce. They are the Shady Horns. The Shady Horns have played with Chaka Khan, the Wu-Tang Clan, Phil Lesh, and Aaron Neville, to name a few. Eric Benny Bloom hails from Rhode Island and now resides in what used to be New Orleans and now Denver. And Ryan hails from Portland, Maine, attended Berklee College of Music with other members of what was to become Lettuce. He played with the Rustic Overtones and now with Royal Hammer. Still?
It's really Lettuce full-time now.
Lettuce full-time. Yeah. Yep. When they're not playing and touring, Benny and Ryan are drinking natural wines and running their own natural wine distribution company. Welcome to the Grape Nation, Ryan and Benny.
Woo!
All right, I want you to give our listeners a little context of where you guys came from. Obviously, you're both New Englanders, but tell me, let's start with how you got into music, how the music thing blew up, and then where wine came in, and then I'll get into some specific stuff about all that. But each of you take a minute or two to, you know, give me that journey.
You know, I grew up in Portland, Maine, which is you know, really great food city, as we all know. But, you know, when I started music, started saxophone in fifth grade, I had the most inspiring teacher that really pushed us to and made us believe that we could do something special with music. And that's where it all started for me musically. And then I met all the guys in Lettuce when I started at Berklee for the five-week program, which was still in high school. We were all 15 years old.
Is that something you had to, like,
it's a summer program,
and get invited to?
No, you just, no.
Just pay and you go.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But, you know, my parents were pushing me. Then they're, you know, trying to get me involved in stuff because I was excelling at saxophone and they wanted me to continue that. So I was lucky to have that support. And then I got put in an ensemble with Eric Krasno.
Ah.
And we hit it off. He brought me up to the dorm and introduced me to Jesus Coombs and Adam Deitch and Adam Smirnoff. He had already met them. So then we started playing together a little bit in the dorm, and we did a cafeteria show and realized that we had some special chemistry. So we,
what year was this?
This was 92.
Okay. That's right.
And
it's crazy,
and
right?
So we all had the same feeling, you know, and we still talk about it to this day, that there was something special there, and we all loved funk music, James Brown, Earth, Wind, and Fire, but we all were bringing different things to the table that each one of us hadn't heard, you know?
Right.
And that continues to happen
now. So
it's
a good collaboration of minds and thought. And
exactly.
All that.
But all coming from a very similar place. Our foundation of music growing up was very similar, almost eerily similar.
So quickly take me through. So you're in college together, you play, you know, you become sort of brothers and all of that.
Yeah.
Obviously, you graduate college. What happens after that?
Well, we didn't graduate college. We all went from averaged about a year, year and a half, 2 years. Our bass player is the only guy that graduated. We started gigging.
Is he the band accountant?
No. He's just... Yeah, but he got his degree.
Okay. But you guys left because you were ready to play.
Ready to play. We got gigs.
Get paid for that.
We weren't great at college. You know, we were great at jamming with each other, but we weren't really going to classes and stuff. So Yeah, so that's what happened. We started gigging. Deitch went on the road with Average White Band and Schofield and Shakira and Wyclef. Right. I got the Rustic Overtones thing. We got a huge record deal with Clive Davis. Bowie sang on our record. It was a magical time for me, and they were all cheering me on. They thought I made it because I got this big, huge record deal at the end of the record era. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right before Napster.
It's not what we know it to be now.
So they were cheering me on. They were proud of me. But musically, it wasn't really where my head was at because I missed that feeling that I had with Lettuce the whole time. You know, I wanted to funk. I wanted to improvise more and all that. So, but I you know, did the Rustic Overtones thing for about 6 years. The record industry collapsed during that time. And then I had a chance to... Lettuce was starting to... Everybody kind of wanted to play together again, you know? So we all...
What year are we talking now? 8, 9 years later?
2002.
Okay.
2010. Easily, basically 10 years. The thing didn't really... We had a hiatus, you know, because everybody thought that we wanted pop gigs. Everybody was getting pop gigs or just doing other stuff.
So did things settle down and start moving forward as Lettuce from that point on, or a lot of stuff?
Yeah, that's when it started, but it was Soul Live was kicking at that point. So Soul Live was Kraz's trio that he started with the Evans brothers.
Right.
And that also slowed Lettuce's ability to grow and play.
Because Kraz was the guitarist.
And he was doing that, so he wouldn't be able to do
all
the
Lettuce. So he had a side thing that frustrate you?
It did.
Like,
for
you
a while.
Want to move, and he was a little ahead of everybody.
Exactly, exactly. So we wanted to make Lettuce a thing, and at that point he was with a trio. He didn't want to be with a 7-piece band splitting up the dough like that.
Right.
So he was like, I don't know if I can go on the road with you guys. And then eventually we just... He realized he
parted
wanted to
ways.
Do different things, and we parted ways, you know, on great terms. And then we now have, the band is at, it's the best it's ever been now.
All right, so let Benny jump in now. So Benny,
huh?
Not far away in Rhode Island.
Oi.
You grew up, you weren't part of that Berkeley thing.
Nope.
But you went to William Patterson, which around my area, that's not a good thing. But there were some good jazz guys there, right?
Nice intro, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. But you were in the New England Conservatory of Music, which is impressive. So you did music in school. Take me from there on. You were one of the later members of the band, but have been with the band almost a decade.
I know.
Let's go backwards and then forwards.
Yeah, so in kindergarten, I said... No, I told you not.
I know. That bang that you hear is me banging my mic over Benny's head.
I'm sorry, guys. So here's the deal. From Rhode Island, blah, blah, blah. Always generally number one all-state in classical and jazz every year.
Serious?
Yeah, generally, mostly.
So you were the real deal early.
Well, I love music, and I was annoying and an ADD and not a problem child. So, but yeah, I just loved music, and it was a great way for me to do, you know, a nice outlet, blah, blah, blah. Then I went to college at William Patterson, a really dope school with a lot of famous musicians, and I've come out of there in North Jersey. It's known as a very good, I hate to say the word, jazz.
Still.
But it's one of the best schools in the country, top whatever, 10, 15, 20. And then you would, after that, I quit. I used to go to New York all the time, played on cruise ships in the summers. And, you know, like, you know, just...
Not jam cruise.
No, not now it's different. But, yeah, not the music cruise. Like, I used to work on Carnival and Queen Mary 2 and the show band. I married an Australian dancer, the whole thing. My favorite ex-wife. Oi. She is. Anyway, then I went to New England Conservatory, which is a really cool school. It's the better school next to Berkeley in Boston, next to
More
Symphony Hall.
And everything,
no, it's really a really amazing classical school and avant-garde kind of, you know.
So were you doing both?
I wasn't doing, but they have amazing, you know, African American studies. It's just it's a smaller, more dialed in, no pop music. It's like Berkeley is a full music business, everything. If you want to meet people and you're going to go to LA and play in Beyonce's band or something like that, or you want to produce records, you go to Berkeley and all those people are going to be in LA when you get there. And it really is a great thing. So I went to NEC, did stuff. And then, you know, over the years and the years, I've been around and played, you know, I did a pop band, played in David Letterman, Conan, all the stuff, TV shows in Japan and Italy. Stuff, things, and I met, I didn't even meet anyone from Lettuce. It's funny, I used to listen to them in college, all over, they're famous.
The contact?
A good friend of mine, Brian Thomas, an amazing trombone player, He was like, yo, do you want to sub? Do you want to play? We need a trumpet player, because the original trumpet player from Lettuce, so the guy that was in it for a long time, Rashawn, plays with Dave Matthews. He is not in the band anymore. And he's like, yo, we need a trumpet player for this James Brown tribute gig in Maine or Vermont. And I met Nigel Hall, and I did good enough that they were like, yo, you're dope. It was Soul Live. It was Soul Live because they're, you know, some of the members do both bands or did. So they used to have a good connection. They still do. So I subbed in that band, and they loved me enough that there's like, yo, we're playing a Lettuce gig in next week. Do you want to do that too? And I did that. Everyone in Lettuce liked me. It was like 2011. So I got both bands in 1 week, which is a pretty big thing for me. And
You jumped onto
Lettuce. They don't let anybody in the crew. They're all freaking boyhood, you know, college, high school friends. So it's a great thing. Thanks, Ryan. They believed in me. They didn't have anybody else. Trust me.
No, what's that X on your shirt on the back?
What X?
Never mind. Go ahead.
That's good. You got me.
Go ahead.
Anywho, so I'm lucky to be in the fold and hang with these guys. Are all my best friends. And
so 2011, it settles in.
Yeah, and now
since then, we're talking 2020.
Yeah, things
are
a lot different.
Touring with the band. All right, so that gets us up to current
music life.
All right. We're going to talk a lot about music. We're going to talk a lot about wine separately, individually, and all that. This is the goofiest question of the interview, but I got to ask it. Can you draw any parallels between wine and music?
Well, yeah, of course.
Don't manufacture an answer.
I'm totally not. I improvise for a living. So, obviously, I think it's called art. Music, food, painting, agreed, dance. Wine is food. We can do this all day. You know, I think everything is the same. When people are in the field picking grapes, they're going to listen to iPods, or they're home putting a record on, or they're old school singing around the piano after a long day's work and a meal. Like, they're singing and doing music. And when I go on stage, or some of the biggest times of my life, I'm enjoying a bottle of wine. It's a symbiotic relationship. And if you can't see the parallel, you know, it's very similar to me. And I think this goes for most art. Everyone, you know, I think art is...
Wine is an art in a way.
Wine is...
As much as it's an agricultural product in the farm.
Yes.
It's very...
But isn't there an artistic thing in that?
Yeah.
Right? Yes.
Everybody has their expression of what their wine is.
Right.
You know, they could be growing the same grapes. Right. They could be making the same kind of wine, but their expression is going to be different than the other guys. And you're going to know their wine from that.
All right. So, Ryan, tell me this. And both of you answer this. When and how did you get into wine? Because it obviously wasn't always a thing. And then tell me that point when the natural wine thing made a lasting impression. Because now, from that point on, it's been very important. So when did you get into wine?
I worked at a couple restaurants in Portland, Maine, you know, when I needed some when I wasn't touring, you know, and I had a friend that owned one, and they were serving like Spanish wines, Portuguese wines, Chilean wines.
So you were inquisitive.
That I would really drink now, but back then I just enjoyed the pairing with food, and I was like, wow, I can really get into this.
So
but
the concept of wine cool as a thing
it was romantic and nice, and I enjoyed it. It was a vibe. And then I'm just interested in all beverages generally and how they make you feel and how they, you know, the history of them and all this stuff. But later on, like 10 years later, when Peter and Arenda Hale they were in Brooklyn for 15 years working for Marlowe &
Sons. It's amazing what they brought to Portland.
And they
tell them who they are.
Yeah, they brought Drifter's Wife and Maine & Loire to Portland. Maine & Loire is the bottle shop that they started with, and it was this enormous space. And
right on the main drag, right?
Well, it's a new part of town that's not the old port.
Yeah, it's like
this thing. So they were one of the first businesses there, actually. And a drummer friend of mine, a great jazz drummer named R.J. Miller, who was my roommate in Brooklyn when I lived down here in New York, is living in Maine again. He's like, yo, do you know about this new wine shop? My boy opened it up. He's a drummer, too. He brings me there, introduces me to Peter. He's an amazing drummer. And the way that he talked about wine was easily understandable for me because
his thing small growers, low intervention, natural?
100% natural.
Okay,
whole,
it was an all natural
natural wine bottle shop.
So at that point, How much into natural wines were you? A little.
I had no clue.
That was your turning point.
That was it.
You dug in with him and all of that.
And then I my first bottle was a bottle of Frank Cornelison Susukaru, the Rosado.
Don't you guys distribute Frank? And we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, but I brought a bottle to Benny. In my suitcase, and we had a show together in New Orleans.
Suitcase boys.
All right, and so pass the mic to
give me that microphone
to Benny. Benny, when did you get into wine? And I would think your natural story is a little different than Ryan's, because Ryan's from Portland. When did that natural? How you got into wine and where the natural thing hit.
Well, I know no one needs an introduction about what natural wine is and everything. And I'm in the industry now. We're both in the industry. The term natural, which is great, and it just winds
up there yet. I know how you got into wine.
Thank you, Ryan.
And when you got into natural wine, and by the way, all three of us agree we hate the term natural.
Okay,
wine,
good.
But we're going to use that now.
Well said.
We like low intervention.
There we go.
We like nothing in the cellar. But thank you. We're going to use natural.
Okay,
wine
perfect. Thank you. You're the man. So, I've been drinking wine a long time. I think cruise ships, because I used to do Carnival. There were so many Italians. It's Italian-owned cruise line, actually. So I remember hanging with one of the engineers, and he had, what's the Pinot Grigio, the Valdice, Santa Margherita.
That stuff.
I mean.
Spritzer with ice.
Well said. Delicious. You know, but when you don't know shit. It's great. Excuse my language. I never had anything like that. You know, like when it was about 2000. So I never had something like that. So that was my first introduction to wine. And then since then, I'd been drinking wine. Then I'd have a silver oak or whatever I thought was dope, and I didn't know. And then Ryan brought me right before a concert with his famous DJ producer named Pretty Lights, in front of like 5,000 people. He brought me this. He brought, I think it was Frank, I think it was Contadino, I believe, whatever, you know, one of Frank's, super no sulfur.
Ryan, you know what year this is about?
Yeah, 2015, let's do 14.
Okay.
14.
So six years ago.
You know, so, but no sulfur, you know, the most energetic wine I'd ever even think about having. I had a first sip, it was like a drug. They have so many.
No other wine that made an impression on you.
No, that was my aha moment.
Yeah.
And you know, because there's like just such mineral content and things that just other wines aren't going to get to because they're being doused with sulfur, the whole deal. So it was a beautiful experience. And then I went on stage, and it was like I was just I was transcended because of the. Of how light and beautiful and energetic that wine is, and it made me have such a performance. That's why we're here. That's why we started a company, and it's a big deal for us.
The right descriptors.
Yep.
So we'll come back to that. But ironically, you guys decide you want to get into the wine business.
You know.
I mean, we're fast forwarding a little, but why and like what was the plan? I mean, what was the moment? It's like was there lack or a gap, or was just something you wanted?
You know, me being from Portland, us traveling all the time and being able to go to San Francisco and New York and experience the movement of natural wine in those major cities, and then where I'm from, where we were way ahead of the game for a small city.
Yeah.
We would go to Denver, Colorado a lot. We have a great fan base there. A couple of our band members are living there now. So we're there all the time, and we're going to all these great restaurants, really amazing food, and we'd go through the wine list, and there was nothing for us that we were really interested in.
Nothing like natural.
There was a couple, but we just realized there was a big gap there, and
it's crazy.
And having
a hip town, a college town, a young city.
But listen to this. It's like, you know, how many health conscious people are in Colorado? A lot. They're living to 100 in Boulder.
I eat organic food, and why I don't drink organic wine argument is like why it's not there. I don't know.
Exactly. Well, so we thought of that. We had that thought, and we're like, why can't we bring some wines in? What do? We had some friends that are in the business there. They run a bottle shop, a bar, and a new French restaurant, Mary and McLean. And they... they recommended that we look into starting a distribution company so we could bring in the wines that we wanted to bring in.
So it's a market, you know, it's a market you're comfortable with. It's a market that was so blatantly lacking that should have been ahead of its time. So who comes up with the idea? Like,
I think Ryan might have had the first, he was like, yo, we should maybe think about trying to bring these wines in. I'm like, dude, you're kind of crazy, but let's talk about it. And we just started talking and doing it. And then we... you know, but before we move on, Denver, of course, is not as dope as New York, San Francisco, Chicago.
No.
However, they do have, like, Louis Dresner's there.
Yeah.
Jenny Francois's there. But, you know, 8 years ago, it wasn't the same. And, you know, and it's a little old guard. So, yeah, we decided to go in there. And now we're just trying to... We talked to Zev. It was like, you know, we're a bunch of kids, you know, have never been in the industry in any way at all. And that's very insulting to a lot of people. But we love, it's called wine. And we love farmers. We love life. We love everything that surrounds this. We don't want to deal with we have to understand the industry. And we have a lot of work to do. But we love wine and we love everything about it. And we want to bring people together. And that's what it's about.
Right. But you're also talking about a business. And you had to set up a business. I don't know if you got to get bonded.
We had to do a lot. Yeah. It was a lot of work. Are you kidding me? It was like I had my lawyer, the whole thing. It was getting licensed, getting fingerprinted. And we knew, luckily, Mary McLean Hedges and Mary Wright and Mary McLean Hedges know everyone in Colorado, kind of. They know a lot of people. And they really helped us get together. And now we have two sommeliers that are our reps, which is great. A lot of reps aren't sommeliers. So we really got a great team together.
How do you select the wines you can distribute? You know, what's available? How do you access that?
Well,
but at that point, you knew what you liked. You knew who the good natural winemakers were. How do you, like, who's available? You know,
I'll tell you.
And who's not?
Well, we love Zev Rovine's, all of his wines. He brings in all these great wines. We love Selections de la Vigne. We love a certain people. Jenny Francois was already there.
So
Louis was already there. So we contacted
these guys
right. And they were like, you know what? Okay, well, you haven't been in the industry, and you know, this is a long shot, and you guys are kind of crazy, but you have the attitude and the energy that we liked, we had when we started this, and we like your vibe.
Like a Zev Rovine. And say, we'll let you.
Yeah, so we went to the office, we met Zev, and he, as I'm looking at the Zev Rovine bag, and we're drinking a Zev Rovine wine next, and it's he just let us, he gave us a shot. And his book has been growing, and he has one of the greatest books in the entire country. And you know, you say, I want some items that I can move and have a lot of volume. I have items that are like unicorn wines that I want to bring in. Ryan, get in there.
So the first day that we met Zev, we go to his office in Brooklyn, East Williamsburg, and his office is filled with wine. There's shelves and shelves of wine, all the samples. So we're looking through. We know a lot of them. We're talking about them with him. And we pull three bottles. We drink three bottles in one meeting, a bottle each, basically. And that's how we found out what wines were available and what wines would be good for our first order to, like, bring to Colorado to make an impression.
His suggestions, really.
And Alvaro from Selections de la Vigne also shares an office with him. So those wines are there, too.
So by hooking up with good guys who had access to good stuff, you were able to kind of put all your minds together and decide, you know, what to do.
Yep.
So you've brought to the market, you know, some great American natural wine producers, but you're bringing in European guys, like a Frank Cornelius.
Yeah, Zev generally brings most of his book is Italian, Slovenian, French, and then he does have like a lot of, you know, Ruth Lewandowski and so many different other American domestics. And the same, then Selections de la Vigne is only Spanish, pretty much, in South America. And so, yeah, we have a handful of domestics. We're really doing a lot of domestics now, and because there's so much dope American wine.
Not deep in the weeds and not too stuck in the business.
Yeah.
So anybody would love to access that market. You know, Denver's a very happening city. Boulder's a good town.
We saw an angle.
So people can come to you and say, listen, distribute these wines for us?
Yeah.
And they do? Exactly,
but you know...
How competitive is in the market? You know,
extreme.
A shitload of...
Well, I mean, New York is...
Has it grown to become competitive?
It's extremely competitive.
You hit the ground?
It's extremely competitive. Yeah,
when
because...
you first started, it was...
These shops, restaurants, places of business, they've been dealing with certain distributors for how many years? And then these new kids that aren't in the industry come with, like, I got this amazing wine. And they're like, I don't give a shit about your wine. I don't know who you are. Come back in 4 months when I have some room on my list.
Right.
So it's a lot of work.
All right, let's talk about the wines. We know that we have friends that love this stuff, and then we know people that think natural wine is funky, right?
Just like my
And without, you know, right, without getting into that too heavily, who better to talk to about funky wines and funk than you guys? You know, natural wines sort of become a lightning rod, somewhat divisive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have friends who get it, and then we have friends that are, it's like sort of like Trump and not Trump.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you love it or you hate it or whatever. Where do you think the organic, biodynamic, low intervention movement is today? Is it still on an upswing? Has it peaked? Is it a boutique thing? Is it misunderstood still? I mean, where are we at with this?
You know, when we first got into it, funky wines were something that we were really drawn to. You know, the longer we, you know, the more experience we started having with these wines, we realized that there's, you know, classic versions, natural versions of classic wines. And once we experienced those, we started kind of chasing those.
Give me some examples.
Like, what's one of our best classic Pinot Noirs or
I like your Sonnenberu.
Yeah.
Classic Pinot Noir.
You know, yeah, there's like, we have like, Sonnenberu, Francois Nicolet. We have some, you know, traditional, like, you know, traditional palate kind of wines with a natural energy. Like I love off the wall, crazy things that are really vinified in a crazy way. But I also love really traditional things that are just done organically and not added a lot of stuff and not a lot of stuff taken away.
But did you come to the realization that in order to be a good businessman, you can't extend just what you like?
Exactly.
But you have to listen to the market.
And as you should.
Right.
Well, it's like, how about this in a music, look at the music term now, do the music side. If I was a musician, I'm just like, I love to do what I want to do, but I also, I'm an entertainer, and there's an aspect of that. And I love to make sure people are, you know, it's both sides. If you're just going to be like, you know, like just a selfish musician, I'm like, it is an art and you're allowed to express yourself, but you know, I want to play ball. And I want people to be happy at the end of the day in every aspect of my life. And I want to do me as well. And this business is just an extension of that, in my opinion.
So, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I remember a turning point in our kind of approach to this was when this article, an interview with Bobby Stuckey came out. And the natural wine world was all, like, offended.
They went that crap on
they
that.
They were offended
that
by
that wasn't that long ago. Like,
right,
a
not
year
too long ago.
Or something?
Yeah, yeah, about a year ago.
Wow, that see, he when did. I used the term lightning rod for natural wines, that story was.
And it's still.
So we got that idea in our head. We're like, man, this guy Bobby Stuckey's going to be hard to figure out. We gotta, you know, do our best. So now, where are we at with Bobby Stuckey, Benny?
Uh-huh. Well, Bobby's a great dude, and you know, he's. I mean, I don't want to get any. Yeah, he's. Yeah, I mean, you know, he opened a new natural wine, a natural wine bar, which in Denver called Sunday Vinyl, which is the greatest vinyl collection and vinyl system and rare. It's unbelievable. Right next to Tavernetta. He's a G. And, you know, that article, he said some things that I want to get into.
Sort of like a Tokyo record bar type thing.
Exactly.
Vinyl and music and wine.
I went to a Tokyo record bar in Mexico City like 3 weeks ago.
There's one in New York. My friend.
Because like, I'm going. Looks like I'm going
friend
over.
Ariel Arce.
But anyway, so Bobby, he's the man.
So you were skeptical about...
I mean, he's a som who's been in the industry so long, and we're very intimidated by that whole scene because we're not like that.
He deserves that cred. I mean, he's
he's an OG, but he said... Yeah. But he said...
No,
but he's,
no, don't
but he said some.
Story.
He said a lot of things in that article, and I haven't spoken to him about him, nor should I. It's him, and I'm not going to get into it, but... We brought him he sells a lot of our wines. He loves generally everything we take him. I also am not going to take him some crazy off the wall stuff. I'm going to bring him stuff that are really kind of down the pike, and you know, and he's loved everything, and he's a nice dude. So like, who am I to say what's happening? But
so that's a great story.
But you know, we're
here's the guy that goes on the record with a story.
Yeah,
evokes a reaction on every end.
You know.
You figure, you know, you're going to do business with him. Maybe, maybe not.
Exactly.
Your biggest.
Yeah, and so we're a bunch of kids that are running around.
Just as a sidebar,
Yeah.
Did he have any idea, like, what you guys do, like, for a day job, or that wasn't even
possible? He knows. He's very internet savvy. He knows the band. He loves music, hence the Natural Wine Music Bar.
Right.
He loves the band. He's super cool and approachable, and he welcomed us with open arms, which I didn't know what to think, and we're just trying to bridge the gap between everyone, from people that don't know nothing about wine to master psalms to musicians to artists. We just want to drink wine with people and literally, that's it.
So here's what I don't get. How do you split your time up being a professional musician and running what now sounds like, you know, a serious business? This isn't a casual inn. I mean, you guys are into wine. You're into natural wine. You chose the market. You know, you want to get in. How do you split the time up? I mean, I didn't realize. I thought you were living in New Orleans. Ryan told me that you moved, and that was step one. You had to be in the market. So how do you do it? Because you effers are as busy as it gets. Between the bands, the side projects. We're in New York City at the Blue Note, you know, with Adam Deitch, you know, who's the drummer for Lettuce, who has a side project. Mm-hmm. You know, you're the rhythm section, the horn section, and all that. Yep. So how do you split that up?
So, you know, Benny really took the whole business by the horns and went to Colorado and committed to it 100%. I'm raising my daughter in Maine. She's 9 years old, and I have that to do. When I'm off the road, I have to go there, you know.
Who do you think's doing a better job, him running the business or are you raising a daughter?
That's a loaded question.
It's about the same. They're both thriving.
I mean, look, you know.
I think Benny's going to say him.
No, I would never say that. His daughter is the dopest human in the world. She's way cooler than both of us. You know, even though Zoid's a real son of a gun, slick-haired son of a poop.
So by default of the fact that Ryan became a dad, you got your ass over to Denver, and you could be on the ground more.
I wish he was there more, and we know, you know, of course. But, you know, he's raising his daughter, and it's, who am I to say? And luckily, I have time right now to do this. And now I'm putting some people in place that are like my right-hand man, that I'm Paul Lysak, who's Assam from New York, who's the freaking man, and now he's part of the company. And Christian Hammer. I have some great people that are helping.
So you have guys on the ground.
But not even guys on the ground, but like sommeliers that are like dope, that loved all traditional and natural wines. And, you know, Ryan is like an overseer. He's got great concepts. He's finding, we're all finding our roles in the company. I'm not going to chide him like I did in the beginning. We're trying to find our roles.
You passed that, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're in a band together. We're best friends. We can't, like, I'm not going to let this business ruin our relationship with the band. And now we're in a different place.
Remember before the interview, you were telling me, you know, he's, you were thinking about throwing him out and shit.
Well, I did try to give away all of his shares, actually.
He did, huh?
Yeah.
So you have it, you're settled in as far as the business.
Involved. You know,
and it's manageable?
Well, this last tour that we just went on, we just went to the Grammys. We were out for a full month and a half, basically.
Straight?
And, yeah.
Just pounding?
And when this happened, like, that hadn't happened since we started the business. We'd done 2-week runs, 3-week runs in the States, everything domestic.
So it was the biggest test today.
So, and we realized together, we finally agreed on this, that we really need to, you know, give those guys a little more responsibility, let them buy into the company a little bit, give them some incentive, and let them run it when we're gone so we feel good about it when we're not there.
But also, exactly, well said. But right now, I'm also
It is well said, because the way you get work done is through other people. A good manager is the guy who gets the job.
100%.
Especially if you can't be there.
My role change. Roles change.
Right.
You know. So when I'm so quickly, you know, when I can, generally I'm up in the morning, ish, you know, 10 o'clock, you know, and I'm doing emails. I'm ordering wine. I'm checking on inventory. I'm getting bills paid. I'm checking who's not paying their bill. You know, the whole thing. And then at night after the gig, I'll do some more stuff. I'm making a price book. I'm going on the website. You know, I have to do that because my guys aren't getting, that's not their job yet. Like, we don't know where we're going to be. And it's important. Like, if I'm going to have this major business, I can't just be like hanging out.
Do you feel at this point you guys have a good grasp on it?
I would love to say yes, but
right, but better than, you know, than
9 months ago. Yeah,
you feel good about it.
Yeah,
we have aspirations about doing this in another state.
I don't. We're gonna have a wine eventually. I think next year. Yeah, we have a good one of our wineries that we represent, Subject to Change in California. Super dope, amazing. 00 Wine, the man. He does a lot of custom crush, so he has a lot of juice left over. And I'm gonna go next year and like blend a bunch of things, make a soup, maybe a lettuce funk wine, and then maybe a Benny and Zoid. Yeah, maybe he's Benny and Zoid with a cartoon of us in the front being funny. And
let me know about that. We'll let you know.
And then that'll be distributed around the country. That wine.
Yeah, that
would be cool.
You could jump on all the other people. You know, you guys are outside of New York. You're in Portland. You're now in Denver. You sort of changed the scene a little. Would you say that the natural wine scene has sort of upped as far as the game? I mean, Portland, the Warren Maine guys brought it in. Have they added since? Other guys have come in?
Well, when they came in, the whole restaurant scene changed the way they buy wine, because they literally would go to the producers and get the producers hooked up with the importers, and then every restaurant you go to now has definitely one natural wine on the menu at least.
So that's good. It's huge. And Benny, same thing in Denver, right?
Yeah. Well,
you mentioned all the big natural guys are in and all of that.
I want to quickly say, there's a couple places, you know, like my friends. There are people before me, but now we are totally changing the menus and all these things. But what we're doing is, because we're musicians, like I'm going back for a week. I have a week off. Instead of like chilling and smoking weed. No, of course not. So what I'm doing the first music event at Bobby Stuckey's. It's a vinyl. I'm bringing in my friend Chris Carnes. He's scratching, doing his thing, and I'm playing along the trumpet, taking over the glass pours one night. We'll go in a place out Wyman Hotel in Silverton where a famous restaurant is doing a pop-up. We're doing a wine pairing. Then I have a concert at an art gallery, and I'm pouring all my wines there. Like I'm trying to make music and wine and art come together like it should be. And that no one's really, no offense, maybe some are, but no one's really doing that. And I'm not saying I'm cool or not. I just think it's what I want to do. When I want to go out, that's what I want to see. I'd love to see
art. You're cool. You're sitting here in your pajamas.
I am.
Come on.
I'm in leopard pants and a Monet shirt. I am.
I know. We're almost done.
We're almost done. I like this. So I'm not playing tonight.
A couple things. We got to wrap up, but nobody leaves without doing the wine list. I'll tell you what that is in a second. But let's do some plugs. Let's talk music for a second. Primarily, we're talking Lettuce, right? I mean, that's the main gig. Yes. What's going on with Lettuce in the near, future and going into spring, summer?
We have a record in the can, done, mastered. It's going to be called Resonate.
And the last record is
Elevate. Yep. Right. And these records, we have three records that we're going to put out. This will be the second one that we recorded mostly in one session. We were trying to make one record. We ended up making three.
Wow.
And
material?
Yep. Yeah. And we recorded all this music.
When's that coming out?
This is coming out in April.
All right. A tour to support? On the road?
We're gonna be playing
out. Are you on now or you're...
Well, we're about to go to Europe for a month.
Starting when?
February 15th.
Okay. And you'll be there how long?
A full month. Okay. 25
back
cities.
In the States, April or whatever.
March 15th, we're back.
Okay, so if people want to know tour dates and crap and all that,
they can go to the thing.
They go to Lettuce.
Yeah, we also just came back from the Grammys. I don't know if you knew about that. We got a Grammy nomination.
You got a Grammy nomination
for our album.
And who won that?
Someone else, not us, but it was our first nomination, so it was huge.
Yeah,
it's just the beginning. I have a feeling it's just. It's just the beginning. Yeah.
Anywho.
All right. Now, what about side stuff? So I mentioned earlier, we're sitting here in New York at the Blue Note Legendary Jazz Club. You know, I grew up in New York. My dad used to take me here to bring guys that you can't believe.
Oh, so cool.
Just because my old man knew what was going on. And we'd go to the Vanguard around the corner.
Vanguard.
All that stuff. Yeah.
How about the Augies?
Who?
Uptown Augies. The Village Gate.
We used to go to the Copa. I mean, we did everything.
Copa.
Beats me at this stuff. All right. Hector Lavoe. My dad was huge into salsa.
Anywho.
All right. So what about side stuff?
We're not really doing
side stuff between the wine and
Yeah, I've kind of given up. Ryan doesn't do too much of that in general. I used to do a lot living in New Orleans, and Lettuce is in a zone right now. They've been in a zone, and I love playing with them. And
nomination.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing,
God bless you.
What else?
So how many days are you on the road?
Oh, geez, 150? 150? Let's do 120.
How was that raising a kid?
It's great.
She's fine.
The time. When I'm home, I'm off.
So the quality time
is the best.
Okay.
Yeah.
This episode of The Grape Nation is brought to you by Washington Wine. Great wine requires great fruit, and Washington State's wine growing region have that department covered. Washington is home to 14 growing regions, 1,000 wineries, and 70 grape varieties, including Riesling, Chardonnay, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and Syrah. Learn more about Washington wines and their growers at washingtonwine.org. During this time, it's more important than ever to support independent growers and winemakers, no matter where you are. There are options to shop online and join Washington wine clubs that ship nationally. Find out about the wines the world is talking about at washingtonwine.org. We're going to wrap this show up with two things. We do a thing called the wine list, and we do a thing called the weekly wine sip. We're just going to talk about a couple of the wines we tasted. All right? So here's the wine list. We subject all our guests to five questions.
Whoa.
Answer quick. Don't dwell on them. Every week, we ask our guests the same five questions. All right? So the first question is, what are you drinking now? What are you trying? What are you tasting? What's in the fridge? Are you shifting seasonally? Benny, you have the mic. You go first. What are you drinking now?
I mean, in my hand or in general?
In general.
You know, not tonight. I own a wine distribution company. I got like 200 wines I can drink. It's hard.
What have you been drinking?
I've been drinking. I'm going in on Burgundy again.
You going with Burgundy?
Yeah, but like, you know, really kind of like
fancy
hands,
Burgundy?
No, hands off Burgundy.
Okay.
No sulfur, as much at least as possible, and just, you know, no light filtration. And
so
just
the newer Burgundy makers.
I wouldn't say newer. I'd say those are the originals.
Believe it or not,
those are the originals.
Most Burgundy guys made Burgundy naturally.
That's what I know. I know. Yes.
The guys that were
and Beaujolais. Yeah, of course.
Right. All right. What about you, Rye?
Well, when we showed up in New York, our Spanish importer took us out, and he brought all the Partida Cruz wines, which are Spanish.
So there's the answer. You get a chance.
And they're wild
because of accessibility.
We got all of them.
So Partida Cruz, okay.
And those wines have been known to be a little bit wild and, you know, a little volatile acidity, maybe some mouse here and there. But the ones that he brought were open for 2 days, stable, delicious. We ate Wu's Wonton King with him.
Oh, Wu's is a liquor license.
Yeah, I mean, they make
whatever you want.
They make a bunch of pet nats. And
I almost brought a pet nat from Maine.
Oyster River?
Yeah.
Those guys are amazing. Yeah.
All right, second question. Goofiest question of the lot. Quick answer. Favorite wine and food pairing. You got one? Something, not something you eat every night, every week, but something that, like, man, this chicken and this burgundy, this is perfect. What could you think of?
No. I've been doing a lot of like arugula and like kale salad, like some that kind of vibe.
With
some like chocolate.
Chocolate?
Yep.
Okay. I think I'm going to end the show right there and shoot myself. All right.
The other day we were out. So we're out, and it was Partida.
No, that's good.
It was basically.
First time ever.
Partida Cruz's version of Lambrusco. I don't even know what the grape was.
Partida Cruz's, so a sparkling red.
Sparkling red. Little tannic, but with, light, good acidity.
With?
Peking duck.
Yeah, perfect. Now.
That was dope.
Benny, spell chocolate.
T-X-O-L-I-N-A. Fuck.
Close enough, though. You got the first two
lines. All right,
we got to move on. You guys got to hit the stage soon.
Go.
All right. Third question. You could give me anywhere. You could do New York, Denver, Portland. Favorite wine restaurant and or bar? A place that has the selection, the vibe, the knowledge. You know, you go in there and you go, this is just good wine place.
You go first, I'll go second. Can I do like three places?
Yeah.
Well, I got to give props to Maine and Loire in Portland.
Perfect.
Drifter's wife
Perfect.
Is one. Frenchette.
Maine and Loire, Drifter's.
Frenchette,
buddy, Jorge
obviously.
Riera is the best.
And then Bufalina in
where?
Austin.
In Austin?
All right. The dope pizza
go
spot.
So
all right, I'm gonna go. No, I'm gonna live on that. I'm gonna do Night Moves,
in
Night
LA.
Market, Night Market,
Night Market in LA.
In LA, I'm gonna go. You said Bufalina.
That's okay. You could say it too.
Ops. Ops in Brooklyn.
Mr. Bobby Bufalina. Ops Pizza.
Bobby Boof. Yeah, Ops Pizza. Yeah. Bobby Boof. And then I'm just going to leave it right there. That's it.
Okay, Ops Pizza is a good one. All right, fourth question. Fourth or fifth of five questions. Favorite all-time wine. When I asked the question, it was, what was the rarest, most expensive wine you ever drank? The question has morphed into, what's a wine that's important to you, that changed you? You know, it doesn't have to be rare. What's an important wine to you?
Ryan, you go first.
It could be that wine at Loire in Maine. I mean, that's the type of thing.
You know what? People are getting sick of hearing about it. And, you know, it's a little bit cliche to mention his name again, but I got to give it up to Frank Cornelison.
Okay, no.
And say that Susukaru, the Rosado.
For years.
The Rosado, when I first had it, it was salty, strawberry.
So that's a wine that resonates with you.
It still does. Even as those wines have changed so much over the years.
Benny, you got something like that?
What is it like? Freaking Jamay, the really cool Cornas. You know, like, you know, it's a
Jamay. Not Cornas. Roti.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's classic.
Yeah, I know, but it's still done.
No,
done
that's
correctly.
That's an awesome older vintage.
Yes, and I'm
Jamay, J-A-M-E-T.
Yes,
Roti. That's a
really into some.
That's a good answer.
Thank you.
So you got new, you got old. All right, last question. You guys should be able to answer this because you're in the business. I'm looking for a recommendation for the best wine around $15-$20 retail. Here's the setup. Willie's going to a party. He can't bring a crappy $8-$9 bottle of wine. He can't afford $40. So he's got to kind of rock these people's worlds with a $20-$22 bottle of wine. Give me a red Recco. Give me a white Recco.
Here we go.
You can give me categories like Muscadet.
Here we go.
Makers.
Cirelli, Francisco. Francesca,
Cirelli. What is that?
C-I-R-E-L-L-I, Cirelli.
That's the maker?
That's the maker. Is in I believe it's in Abruzzo. And
that's white.
Fully biodynamic producer, does Serrasuola, Trebbiano, Montepulciano.
$20
No, range? from like 17 to 21, and fully biodynamic, no sulfur, and they have Pecorino. They have like four different ones that they have, amphoras. Anyway, there you go, Ryan.
Give me, what was that, red?
Red and white. They have a bunch.
You know what? I'm going to go with Pepeño, the leader. He's going to show up to the party
spell
with a chilled.
Spell Pepeño.
Chucky Maravedo.
Pepeño.
P-I-P-E-N-O.
Okay, and he's making what varietals?
He's
País.
It's mostly País.
País.
So it almost has a nose like mezcal, and it
really,
and it's light drinking, and it's a liter, and it's $19, and it's show up with chilled red at a party, and he's gonna be the
interesting
man.
Stuff, right?
Yep.
All right, good choices, guys. You did a good job. You didn't dwell on it. You gave me some interesting answers. Just for my listeners' sake, I post all these answers on
Please.
Our social media sites.
Yeah, cool.
We post the wine list. We post what we're drinking tonight.
This is the best wine I've ever.
Yeah, let's do this.
That's why people.
This is dope. I'm calling.
Right, we got to wrap the show up.
Who are we thanking?
No, wait. We do a thing called the weekly wine sip. Every week we taste a different wine on air. I brought in sort of tribute to you, a Dirty and Rowdy. But it's not just Hardy's. It was a collaboration with Michael Cruz. It's a Ferment, which is a Hungarian wine.
That's right.
Which they usually make Tokay with it. Now, the second wine that we produced, I'm hoping this is one of your wines?
Yep.
Okay, this is what?
Jean-Yves Perron from Savoie. This is a Moscato.
So it's the name
but
of the wine
is
Ivicini?
No.
Yeah.
And then the producer is
Jean,
Jean-Yves Perron.
Spell Perron,
P-E-R-O-N.
Okay. And this is, what's the grape?
I believe this is the, I believe it's Moscato, but it's, what do you call it? Skin contact.
It's
like a papaya sandwich.
Sort of an orange skin contact.
Yeah.
So for all
it's
you
freaking dope.
That you
it's
know tropical. Only have to order
it's like
wine.
It's a tropical okay, beautiful no, vibe
going, it's easy.
This is delicious. It's got a little grapefruit.
Definitely.
It's got
it's dope. And then the other one we have that we did it we're just getting to is by Clolentiscus out of Penedès.
Right, we got to spell. I mean, I'll put everything on the
C-L-O-S, Clo, Lentiscus.
Don't you guys do Clolenticus too?
This is
Clolenticus.
Lentiscus, coming up.
I met him.
L-E-N-T-I-S. C-U-S.
C-U-S.
Clothing Thieves Goes. But of course, they use a lot of...
I interviewed him at the Raw Wine.
He is the... Him and his daughter, Nuri...
Order's beautiful.
She's the greatest. However, they do a lot of sparkling. His nickname is the Bubble Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of our major producers, people we represent. And...
Chirello Vermel.
That's exactly what that is. No, it's like... No, it's like... What is it called? Cartoja Vermelho. Where's my importer when I need him? Hey, we gotta play. We gotta play in like I have to play in 11 minutes.
All right, listen to me. We're wrapping up.
Teeth.
Don't go anywhere.
Don't
we're
go
wrapping
there, Ryan.
Up. All right, so we tasted two of the three wines. Yep. I'll post them.
Yep.
All three of the wines that we tasted are wines that you guys distribute in Colorado.
Yes, exactly.
And you're, you know, big guys. I want to remind everyone you distribute American wines and European wines
That's
in
right.
Colorado.
Thank you.
And the name of the company is Benny and Zoid, right?
Selections.
Selections in Colorado. All right, guys, we got to wrap up. We got to wrap up for two reasons. One, I have a headache. And two, you got to go on the air.
That's okay? right.
Don't feel bad. It's from the wine.
No.
All right. So if you have a question, suggestion, wine happening, or event, hit me up at samatthegrapenation.com. That's samatthegrapenation.com. Subscribe to the Grape Nation podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Follow us on Facebook at The Grape Nation, on Instagram. We're at SBenRuby. On Twitter, we're at BenRuby. I know it's confusing, but always use the hashtag The Grape Nation on both. As I mentioned, we'll post Ryan and Benny's wine list answers and all the weekly wine sip wines that we tasted on our social media sites. Ryan, Benny, if we want to follow you guys on social media, we can follow what's Lettuce's?
Lettuce Funk on Instagram.
Lettuce Funk on
and
Instagram.
And then Benny and Zoid Selections.
And Benny and Zoid Selections.
Yeah.
And you guys have personal accounts? Or
yeah, like, Zoidis, my last name.
Z-O-I-D-I-S.
Yeah, Eric Benny Bloom is mine.
And Eric Berry Benny Bloom. All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you to our guests, Eric Benny Bloom and Ryan Zoidis. Thank you to our engineers and everyone at the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sam Benrubi, and you've been listening to The Grape Nation. The Grape Nation is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.